This is The Takeaway. I'm Todd Zwillick in for John Hockenberry. Thanks so much for listening. Well, in this hour, we're cracking codes. First, the tax code. It is tax day. And when it comes to charity, the question is who gives in this country? The rich? The not so rich? There are some proposed changes in the tax code that could change what it means to give, at least where Uncle Sam is concerned. Next, your genetic code. The Supreme Court hears a fascinating case that could determine who owns your genes. But we start with immigration. Senator Marco Rubio is living by a warrior's code of sorts, this weekend hitting not just five of the traditional Sunday morning political talk shows, but seven. He also appeared on the Sunday shows of two Spanish language networks.
Senador Marco Rubio, gracias por estar con nosotros una vez más aquí en el programa.
Senator Rubio, thank you for joining us.
We are the party of upward mobility.
Thank you, John.
We are not the party of the people who have made it.
Senator, welcome back to Fox News Sunday.
We have a legal immigration system that does not work.
Senator, thank you for joining us.
Gracias, Jorge.
Now, there's Marco Rubio all over the place on television this weekend. Well, tomorrow, a group of senators known as the Gang of Eight, that includes Marco Rubio, introduces its bipartisan immigration bill, long-awaited, trying to fix America's immigration system, find a solution for 11 million undocumented immigrants. And that's just the tip of the iceberg when it comes to immigration. In a moment, we're going to hear why some people are calling this effort, quote, the most ill-conceived reform of immigration law in U.S. history. That's a bold statement. But first, Julia Preston. She's immigration correspondent for our partner in the New York Times. She's been following this immigration reform effort, the pathway to citizenship, as it's being written, and joins us now. Hi, Julia.
Hi, Todd.
Thanks for joining us. Well, it's a great big bill with lots and lots of different sections, as complex almost as the immigration mess itself. Let's deal with just a couple of them. The 11 million undocumented immigrants that I just mentioned, they're here. People have sort of decided we're not going to deport them. So what does the Gang of Eight deal envision for doing with 11 million people who are already here?
This bill is going to give them a 13-year path to citizenship. One of the ideas that is not accepted in this bill is the notion that you would have some kind of legal status that would not lead eventually to citizenship. But getting there is going to take a good long time. They will be in provisional status for 10 years, during which time they can work and they can travel, but they can't become legal permanent residents, which is the first path to citizenship. And during that 10-year period, millions of immigrants who've been waiting in the backlog will be able to go forward and get their green cards, as that visa is known. So it will be at least 13 years before people who've been undocumented in this country will be eligible to apply to become U.S. citizens.
Now, of course, a lot of Republicans and even some Democrats from border states have been making a big effort to try to tie border security to the 13-year process that you just mentioned. We're not going to let people stay, or we're not going to implement it until we have proof that the border is more secure. So where does that part of the bill come down on it?
Well, that part of it is pretty complex, but the bottom line is there is a very big appropriation and a very ambitious program to obtain a much higher degree of border security than we have now during that 10-year period before any of these undocumented immigrants would go on to the path to citizenship. So we've got $3 billion. The Department of Homeland Security is called upon to create a very ambitious a program, much more ambitious than they have now, that would give us, among other things, by the end of 10 years, or even really by the end of 5 years, they want to have 100% visual surveillance of the border, and they want to have almost a 95% rate of efficiency in terms of catching people who are coming across.
So there are lots of other sections to this bill, Julia Preston, about visas, about farm workers, about skilled workers, and visas for people who have PhDs and engineering degrees and such. But there's a long time to talk about those. None of this is going to happen overnight for sure. So let me
ask
you about...
We're definitely going to need a long time. This is a really complicated bill. Yeah.
And gigantic, with tons of different political factions fighting it out here. We've seen this before. We've seen the immigration movie before. It's never worked out well, at least not recently. What's the fundamental balance here? Obviously, this Gang of Eight, half Republicans, half Democrats. Marco Rubio, the conservative, is out there selling this bill, trying to get conservatives on board. What's the tacit message here? Like, hey, liberals, what do you get out of this deal? Conservatives, what do you get out of this deal so that people can kind of get behind it and not just torpedo it?
Well, I think there are two things going on in terms of a political shift. One, obviously, is the shift towards both parties realizing that the Latino vote is going to be very important for them in the future. The other is a broad recognition that our immigration system is broken. And so there is really a will to fix it at this point with that political momentum behind. What Democrats are getting out of this is a direct, if long, path to citizenship for 11 million people who are undocumented in the country. In addition, they're getting lots of visas for people who are trying to come through their family ties who've been waiting in these enormous backlogs, 20-year backlogs. Those folks are going to have an expedited process to finally get their green cards. And on the Republican side, you're getting a tremendous boost of border security. Senator Rubio in particular negotiated back the start date for when the eligibility date and put in a lot of hurdles along the way that that I think can give Republican satisfaction that there will be significant enforcement measures in place. Oh, and of course, the other thing is the mandatory worker verification nationwide, which was a very important element for selling this bill to people who want enhanced enforcement. So it's a pretty delicate and intricate compromise, but I think it's pretty good in terms of addressing the failings in the system currently.
They want to crack down on the border. They want to crack down on illegal inflow and crack down on employers who hire illegal workers. All of those things enter this complex deal. We're only at the start of it. This is just one bipartisan Senate bill. The House, we haven't even seen their bill yet. We got a long way to go. But that's Julia Preston, immigration correspondent for our partner in the New York Times, here to help us. Julia, thank you so much.
Good to talk to you, Todd.
Well, as the Gang of Eight works on that bill behind closed doors to revamp the immigration law, there is some concern that their efforts, although well-intentioned, could leave us in a worse spot. Among them are members of the Center for Immigration Studies. Now, this is a nonpartisan think tank here in Washington, and they say this, that the Gang of Eight is developing, quote, the most ill-conceived reform of immigration law in U.S. history. Now, that's saying a lot. Mark Krikorian is the executive director of the Center for Immigration Studies, here to defend that statement. Hi, Mark.
Hi, glad to be here.
Well, you just heard Julia Preston from the New York Times trying to describe the political balance, border security, cracking down on illegal hiring, but also pathways to citizenship, reuniting families, finding a way for 11 million people to not be deported. How can that be the most ill-conceived reform in U.S. history of immigration law?
Well, it actually tops the 1986 amnesty in a number of ways, but let me first say, you know, how is it similar? In 1986, Congress passed very similar legislation. It did legalize amnesty, almost 3 million illegal immigrants, in exchange for promises to get tough and enforce the law in the future. In fact, it was written by some of the same people. Senator Schumer was then a member of the House of Representatives and was key to getting that piece of legislation through. What happened was the amnesty was up front. It happened. The enforcement sputtered along and then dried up within 10 years or so.
Okay, but here we are today. So why is this worse?
Well, because, for a couple reasons. First, the number of illegal immigrants we're talking about amnestying is much larger. Amnesty is something is distasteful, but sometimes it's something you have to do. There are parking ticket amnesties. There are tax amnesties. Prudence sometimes suggests that it's something you at least have to look at. This, however, is an enormous number of people we're talking about amnestying. And this legislation has elements that would dramatically increase future legal immigration. You referred to them in passing. There are a whole bunch of different guest worker programs. This would import large, dramatically increased numbers of low-skilled workers, not only to compete with American workers, but also, inevitably, because of their low skills, people who will end up making significant use of taxpayer-funded services. So this is really the failed 1986 approach, but on steroids. So this is clearly you know, the worst, I mean, the worst thing that Congress has seriously considered, I think, that we've ever had in immigration history.
I want to get to one of your other critiques from the Center for Immigration Studies. We're talking with Mark Krikorian, executive director. Many Republicans, some people call them the corporatists, you could say the Mitt Romneys, the George W. Bushes of the world, a big part of the party, sort of appreciate the value of inexpensive labor. They consider it part of the fuel for the U.S. economy, and that getting allowing 11 million people to stay here and also having a healthy inflow provides the cheap labor that so many of our industries, agriculture, hospitality, restaurants, construction, that they need. Now, you say that that whole idea is misguided.
Yeah, I mean, the verb you used was incorrect. Those industries don't need the labor. They like the labor. They become hooked on the labor. I mean, they need the labor the way, you know, a drug addict needs another fix, precisely because they have had access to these large pools of controllable workers. And the advantage to the employers is not really the illegal status. That's only a minor part of it. The reason employers like this because it floods the labor market and enables them to pick and choose who they want to hire. It puts the employer in the driver's seat, whereas a tight labor market puts the employee or the job seeker in the driver's seat, and he gets to negotiate better wages and better working conditions. And, you know, frankly, a tight labor market is the best social policy because it empowers those who don't really have much to negotiate with in the economy other than their two hands. Guys, the Chamber of Commerce and the National Restaurant Association, they've got plenty of lobbyists working Capitol Hill. They take care of themselves just fine. I'm worried more about ordinary people with relatively little education don't really have a lot of good prospects in the job market. But if the labor market is tight, they are in the driver's seat. And government policy's role should be to, if there's any thumb on the scales, it should be on the side of people at the bottom, not people at the top.
Mark Krikorian is helping to debunk some of the conventional wisdom around the bipartisan Gang of Eight immigration reform plan hitting the Senate this week. We thank you for it, Mark. Mark Krikorian, executive director of the Center for Immigration Studies in Washington.
Thank you.
Well, all this hour, we want to hear your immigration stories.
My name is Oswaldo Sandoval. I'm calling from Davie, Florida. My father came here with myself when I was 6 months old illegally. He came here through Mexico. He studied pretty much for his board, worked at a two shoe factories, and well, now he's an American citizen. So am I, my mom, and he's a doctor. And it's just one of the best examples of the opportunity that you get here in the great country of the U.S.
You can call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE. Coming up next, the Supreme Court. Who owns your genes? They're asking that question today. Stay with us.